You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Monster House presents...
Monster Talk's a proud member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, home of such shows as Food with Mark Bittman, Big Picture Science, and Fork in the Road. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com. Visit monstertalk.org/support, where you can find even more ways to help keep this show going.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk. Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
If you've ever played Dungeons & Dragons, you probably ran across kobolds, which the 5th edition systems reference document describes as follows.
Kobold. This short reptilian humanoid has scaled skin, a snout filled with tiny teeth, and a long tail.
Previous Monster Talk guest Peter Biebergall edited a volume called Appendix N, which collects many of the sources of fiction that inspired Gary Gygax and Dave Arneson when they created the game Dungeons & Dragons. But that game also famously grabbed every bit of folklore and fandom it could reasonably snag, so that you run into Egyptian gods and Celtic ghosts and Lovecraftian horrors and even dinosaurs at the same gaming table. But the real folklore of kobolds and other Germanic fae is a lot more interesting than Dungeons & Dragons' 25 XP barely intelligent lizard people. We're going to be talking to Florian Schaefer, the artist and project lead on a new book called Hausgeister. In this beautiful book, Schaefer's handcrafted monster sculpts are photographed in realistic settings and accompanied by a text which provides details about the lore. The book also includes one of my very favorite things in a monster book, essays from academics of multiple disciplines who give commentary on these creatures to form a holistic analysis of their importance. It's really good stuff. The book drops at the end of July, but it's available for pre-order immediately. There's a link in the show notes to that. But now, let's travel to Germany and have ourselves some...
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, Florian Schaefer. Florian is an artist and a biologist and is the creator of all of the artistic models of German folklore figures that appear in this book that we're going to be talking about today, Hausgeister. Mm-hmm. And I am excited to talk to you. This was amazing work. I've got several friends who do arts and crafts, and my children love to make things. So I'm envious of your talent, but this is also just a wonderful book covering this material academically, intellectually, folklorically, historically. It's a lot crammed into what otherwise might look like just an average coffee table art book. It's a lot. I'm impressed.
Thanks a lot for your kind words.
Yeah. How did you get involved with this project?
Yeah, I started sculpting I guess, 5 years ago, around 2017. And I was sitting in front of my table and was thinking, what could I sculpt? And I thought, let's do a cobalt. But what does a cobalt look like? And I started, because I have a really strong fantasy background, so I started reading fantasy literature in my childhood. And if you know Dungeons and Dragons, for example, there are kobolds, but they are like lizard people or something like that. And I remembered that and thought, no, but that can't be the truth. And I started looking into the literature, and I found completely different descriptions in the old folk tales of Germany. And I thought, okay, let's start with that. And beginning with this, it started to grow bigger, and I started to post some of my creations on the internet. And people said, oh, that's a nice topic, folklore related creatures, but in a modern way. Yeah, so I gave the whole thing a name, and Forgotten Creatures became a brand.
Nice.
Yeah, it is just such a beautiful book, and I really enjoyed looking through it. And my son, he's 8 years old. He is really enjoying the book as well. And so we'd like to start by talking about some German ghosts. And I think there's a lot of overlapping with Anglophone culture as well. But
definitely,
some of these, but some of these spirits I haven't heard of. So you mentioned the kobold. Could you tell us a little bit about you mentioned a bit about what it looks like, what it does, and just some of the folklore behind this creature or character.
Yeah, so if we want to look into the folklore of the kobold, we can go quite a lot back in time to medieval times or even earlier, because people, when living in houses in early German-speaking countries during the Middle Ages, people thought that a person who builds a house and then dies in it becomes some kind of ancient spirit who preserves the household. And this may be the origin of the kobold. And during the medieval times and early modern times, the church was not really, they did not like that people believed in other spirits or in dead people preserving households or something like that. Though they started to change those legends around these creatures. And in this time, this spirit, this former bodiless spirit, became something small, like a small human-shaped creature living close to the oven and doing pranks to people. But originally speaking, these pranks were not really pranks. They were punishments for people who did not do their job right. And with the influence of the church, this changed, and the kobold turned into something like a little devil. Mm. And I think in other cultures we have the brownie, the pook, or other creatures who are pretty similar to the kobold. But this is the original German word for this creature. Yeah.
Do you think that the shrinking of their physical form represents like the metaphorical intent of the church to shrink their importance?
I think both of the church, but also the normal people on the countryside, because it's like the name kobold derives from the house or someone who lives in a house, but in a small way. So by using a taboo name or a shrinking word, you can shrink the power of a creature as well. So that's a quite common folk belief in UK as well. They talk about the little people or something like that, not because they're always depicted or imagined small, but by calling them small, you may shrink their power on you.
See.
Neat. Yeah. Well, the book itself, again, it's full of art from your work in sculpting, but it's also full of really informative historical and cultural narrative. Where does this lore come from? What are the sources that you guys used?
Yeah, the main sources are not as old as I would like them to be, because most folk tales in Europe were written down in 19th century or in early 20th century by famous people like the Brother Grimms, but also there were quite a lot of other people who started to collect those tales and to write formally oral tales on paper. Mm-hmm. But we also have older evidence. We have some kind of documents from witch trials. Also, we have medieval manuscripts and even ancient literature from Greece or the Roman Empire. And if you go back in time, it's pretty hard to find real evidence on folk beliefs, but you find some of them. But the main corpus, the main resources we used for this book come from early modern times.
I would love to talk about a very famous German spirit, so the poltergeist. The poltergeist is very famous, very popular in Anglo culture, and I'm wondering, is there any difference between the poltergeist in German folklore and Anglo culture, and how did poltergeist become so famous and popular in Anglo culture?
That's a pretty good question, and we're covering that in the book as well, because we have a small section in the book where we invited scientists from different fields to write something about how they are, or their field is connected to Hausgeister. And mm-hmm. we talked to a psychologist, and during the talk with him, we really saw that the poltergeist in some way is the same as the kobold. Because when people stopped believing or talking about the kobold in the 17th and 18th century, the poltergeist phenomena started. And if you look into the folk tales, what a kobold does is exactly the same what the poltergeist does. So maybe people started, and they're both ghosts of dead people in most folk mm-hmm. tales who state the origin of a kobold. There are always different stories, but if you would count the number of folk tales describing the kobold as a ghost, as a spirit of a deceased, of a dead one, it would be around 70-75%. So the poltergeist is a person who stays in the house and does in some way they are doing pranks on people. If you look into the folk tales, the later folk tales always describe a kobold as a really noisy one. You hear Lotha, you hear him knocking on doors behind walls. They take tables or other inventory of your house and pull it away and that stuff. So it's pretty similar to the poltergeist descriptions. And that's quite an interesting take, because the psychologist we talked to said that he believes that in medieval times, as well in modern times, around 20-30% of humankind believed in supernatural entities. And this mm-hmm. did not change throughout the years. Just how those magical descriptions were depicted changed. So with the 18th century, maybe the traditional ghosts and spirits disappeared, but people invented new forms of describing their fears and other emotions.
The knocking is so interesting, because it appears in so many different folklores. I think
and spiritualism.
Like, and it's also on the Tommyknockers, which are I guess a Cornish folklore about mining spirits. And then is it the Klabautermann? Is that the naval one? Am I remembering that right? Is that, which is the spirit that lives on boats and lets you know?
Yeah, it's the Klabautermann.
And that one also you want to hear the knocking. You want to hear the creaking and the knocking to know they're there, which I thought was really interesting. I was a sailor long ago, and I remember lots of ghost stories, but I don't remember anything like that from my time in the Navy. But I got to thinking, you would only want a ship won't sink if you've got one of those on board, right? So you wouldn't want them on a submarine.
But exactly.
It doesn't work.
They're kind of cute, these ones.
They are. Can you tell us a little bit about the folklore about that one, the Klabautermann?
So they are also close to the kobold, like the kobold of a ship. And most of the time, people thought of them as little sailors who lived in the front part of the ship. Between, so, and now my English ship vocabulary is not that great. So between the outer and the inner hull, and there inside, this small guy would live and normally wouldn't show himself to the sailors. And folklore says that if you see a Klabauter, the ship will really, really fast sink. And normally he just shows himself to the captain and warns him that something bad is going to happen. And in all other times when everything is fine, you will just hear him knocking, repairing areas of the ship the sailors couldn't reach.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because when you think about knocking with poltergeist, or in Anglo culture anyway, they're trying to communicate or something like that, not trying to fix things.
That's true. That's a little bit different, and mostly it's more... Yeah. Yeah, maybe dangerous or some. So it's not something positive most of the time if you hear them.
So many different creatures and characters and monsters and demons in this book. What's the witch tale? Is that, because it sounds like, oh, it's a witch, but isn't this more of a kind of gnome or a dwarf?
You're talking maybe about the moss people of German folklore. They are typically depicted in two different ways, either as a really old-looking, really small woman, or as a woman or people with hair like moss and lichens and skin like tree bark. So these are two different depictions, but if you look into what they are doing, they are identical. They're living in the bigger rests of forest in German speaking area, and typically they are a small culture of moss people, though there are both female and males, but in the society of the moss people, males are not really important. It's a little bit different than in our society for a long time. And in these folk tales, always the female ones come to people because they maybe have a problem or something like that, or they are hunted by the wild hunt and search for someone who rescues them. And in those cases, they get in contact with humans, and if they help them, they sometimes follow them into the house and turn into household spirits for some time, and especially harvesting ghosts who help to improve harvesting stuff and this.
Okay, and so with their depiction, the way that they look, are they a little comparable to the idea in English of a crone or a hag or maybe even a cunning woman?
So in German folklore, we have witches as well. A little bit, but they are always depicted as quite friendly as long as you help them. If you are not nice to them, they can turn pretty dark as well. But in most folk tales, people are a little bit scared, decide to help them, and after they help the moss women, typically they have some kind of present, like old leaves people are annoyed and throw the leaves away. And when they're back home, there's just one leaf on their clothes and it turned into gold. And they recognize, oh, what have I done? Return to the forest, but all the leaves are gone. That's the typical story around those creatures. And they're not like the typical UK hag in swamps or something like that, getting kids into the water and eating them or something like that. They are totally friendly and living together with their not as important moss men and doing also weddings and stuff. So there is some descriptions on their social society in folktales in between the lines.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because I don't know so much other descriptions of similar creatures. Mm-mm. Maybe it's some kind of German take on elves and other more fairy-like creatures, because originally in our folktales we don't have fairies and elves like in English or French mythology.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like the Greek dryads.
And, a little bit.
And also the Eastern European Baltic region has the Xena, which is a spirit of a glade, I guess.
Yeah.
A bit like that.
And that's a good point, because there are some folk tales stating that they are connected to trees, and if you damage the tree, you damage the life of the moss women as well. So yeah, there is definitely a connection to the ancient mythology that was transformed into this more modern.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or, say, Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like, I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose, it kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever, crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and Wagon.
Folk tales.
Yeah, that's neat. It's in the art that accompanies, it's also very impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things I read in here that totally surprised me that I hadn't run into it before was the house drake. I had never heard of this folklore before, and I'm always excited when I hear something new. Can you talk a little bit about house drakes?
So, yeah, it's even in German a little bit weird, because they call it a dragon, so a Drache in German, but it is not really a dragon like we know it from mythology. It's some kind of fiery creature made of fire, and there are quite a lot of different depictions. Sometimes it's like a fireball with eyes or horns who comes into households if you are able to control one. So witches were said to have the power to control a house drake, and they would use these creatures to collect money, milk, or grain from other households, and they would fly through the chimney, get everything from the neighbors, and then bring it back to you.
Wow.
Like a Robin Hood.
It wasn't me, officer. It was my house dragon. He stole everything.
What? Yeah.
So, yeah, we really have documents from witch trials where people were asked, were you able to summon a house drake and used him to get money from your neighbors or something like that. There are not that many, but there are some. And the problem of the name is definitely there, because you have a lot of contamination between the different folklore species.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some folk tales who mix that up. And in Saxony, for example, you can't differentiate between the kobold and the drag, because they merged them together in one species.
I see.
And in other areas, you definitely have a kobold lore, but also the drag, who may sometimes appear as a chicken as well, because all these creatures always can transform their appearance. But normally, the house drag is no serpent, no dragon-like creature, but the name is closely related. So during all times, people mixed it up, and sometimes they are described as a dragon-like creature, but in most folk tales, they are like meteors or something like that. And this is also an explanation for this kind of phenomena, that people saw stars on the sky or other meteor phenomena, and used these to form some kind of folklore creature as well. And especially in times when people had no money and really bad time, no harvest success, they started to blame each other. That's a typical thing we see in a lot of bad times. And this was the period of those creatures, like the drag, because people started to search for explanations why the grass of the neighbor is greener than theirs.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. It's really interesting. Oh, you want to say
something? I did. I was going to say, so it sounds like drac, but it's not really a dragon. It's more like we would say something like a fire elemental or a fire spirit.
Yeah.
Maybe more like
something
that.
Something like that.
Yeah, very neat. Sorry, go ahead, Karen.
A lot of similarities and crossover. I was just going to say that it's just really interesting to hear about just the descriptions of these creatures and how they're very much of their time. Very much a time where people were farming and agriculture and misfortune and the kinds of problems that people would have. It's just interesting how it reflects that culture of the past. Yes. But I wanted to ask you about house demons. Now, is there overlapping with the kobold and the poltergeist, or is this something different?
It's definitely overlapping, and that's because of the church fighting folk belief. Because originally speaking, if I look into the folk tales of German areas, there are no really bad entities, because all these creatures have a positive and a negative side. But when the so-called Interpretatio Christiana, so the Christian interpretation of the churches started, they turned all of these creatures more or less into demon versions.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about demons, the original word demon is not really negative. It's just our modern church influence point of view. I don't want a church bashing all the time. It's really good that we had the church, because they were the people who start writing down stuff. Without the church, we wouldn't know anything about the past, because the early names we have, for example, of the kobold from the 12th century, but also earlier ones, were all noted down by monks who started to translate ancient literature into German, and they described in these documents that they discovered similar stuff in the local people, and then you can see that they made notes on the side of manuscripts, and those are really helpful to get something to know from these old times, because the people on the countryside, they had, why would they write something down? Most of them were not able to write.
Illiterate.
And even later, they had no time for that. They had to work. And they started to tell stories orally. But the church, with all their monks and priests, they had pretty much time. And they used the written word. So nearly everything we know, even from Norse folklore, is based on Christian interpretation. Even the Edda is Christian influenced, written down by a Christian guy. So yeah, I don't like it when people start to do church and bashing on Christians all the time and say, without them there would be all the old knowledge and stuff. I fear it wouldn't, because all the other people not wrote down anything.
We can thank them for that.
at least. There is not that much we can then thank for, but yeah.
Pretty buildings.
From a historical point of view.
Yes, yeah.
So, now, we have a couple more monsters we'd like to talk about, but or I should say, house spirits. This one's really interesting because it's got a bunch of different names. The Geldmannlein, I have to say the name I liked the most was Goldscheiße, which I think, am I right? That basically means it poops gold, right? I think.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's the gold pooper.
Need one of those. Yeah.
But it reminds me of a mandrake. It's like a man-shaped root. Talk about this for us.
So yeah, we can do small German lesson. It's Geldmännlein.
Nice. Okay.
And it's like money man, little money man.
Nice.
If you translate it literally. And the folklore around these creatures is based on the mandrake. So the myth
behind
the mandrake is really, really old. We can go back to ancient Egypt or even look into the Bible and all that stuff. We really find a lot of folklore and mythology around the mandrake. And in German-speaking areas, the human-shaped plant transformed in some way to a plant-shaped human creature. And they imagined that you had to harvest those Geldmännlein or mandrakes in a really special way. They normally grew under or at places where you would hang people.
Yeah, the gallows or the gibbet.
The gallows, yeah. So they would grow under a gallows because the semen of a guy who was murdered at the gallows would get to the ground, and then from this semen a mandrake or a spirit would grow. And there it is the same as the normal mandrake folklore. If you get it out of the earth, it will start to scream, and that can immediately kill you. And the folk tales in Germany are not that animal friendly, because they don't say put something in your ear. They say take a black dog and put him on a leash, and then you can just use the dog and take some treat and throw it away, and the dog will pull the mandrake out, die, and you can then take the mandrake. That's a bit dark.
It is.
Nowadays.
Wow.
Point of view.
Yeah.
But they stated in several folk tales. So, and if you get the mandrake from the ground, then the process of turning it into a money man starts, and you create small clothes for him and put him into a box and give him wine and sometimes bath him in water and milk, and it will grow and then produce money for you. In some folktales, you have to give him one coin, and later the day it will turn into two coins. In others, they start from themselves to create gold. But in some way, you get rich using such a small money man.
Well, in a very literal sense, if your book makes money, it works. I see him right there on the page. You made him, and then you get some money. That'll be great.
There you go.
Yeah, in some way, that's true. But there is a problem around the Geldmännlein, because if you use him, your soul is tormented. So if you own a money man, when you die, you go to hell.
Oh.
And here the church again comes into the game because they, yeah, they couldn't change people's mind and just rid out the belief in mandrakes. So they started to change the story slightly. Mm-hmm. And so you got this twist. So, yeah, you're really, really old and you want to get the money man away. But it's not that easy. You just can't throw him out of the window because he will return. You have to sell him. And in most folktales, you have to sell him for a smaller amount of money than you used to buy him.
Yes.
And that's quite hard because if you say something like, I just want $5 or something like that for it, other people would say, oh, that's quite cheap. I'm not sure if that's really a good deal. Or maybe just $2. I can do a really good deal. So in the end, people will end up going to a priest, and in most folktales, this priest will then help them to get rid of the money man, and in the end, they're back to the church. Yeah. So in the end, it turns out good for everyone most of the time, and especially for the church.
The church, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's again the church. Thing. It's always the church because they had a really big influence.
Absolutely. I think I'm... That is just, it's interesting to me because Mandrake appears in the Harry Potter stories. The story about trying to get rid of a thing that gives you money is such classic folklore. And then there's another story in here about giving an elf or giving a house spirit clothing, a kobold. Yes. It's giving a kobold clothing frees it of its obligations. So and that's directly referenced in the Harry Potter books as well.
But it's not a kobold. It's a dwarf or wichtel.
A dwarf. Okay, thank you.
Because we have to differentiate between these two. Maybe is that okay to describe the difference between these quite similar looking species?
Yes, we want our listeners to be informed so they know what they're looking at. What
exactly?
It's good. So
know what
kobold,
to avoid.
As I said earlier, is some kind of ancient family spirit. Most of the time it's male because the leader of the house were male back in the days. And they're always single appearing creatures. There are never two kobolds at one time, or at least there are really, really, really small amount of folk tales on that. So normally, if you look at the broader scale, there's only one kobold per household, and if you move from one house to the other, it will follow because it's connected to you and your family. The dwarfs, wichtel or heinzelmännchen, on the other side, are spirits of the mountains or spirits of the earth, and they come into the household with a bunch of guys and girls, and then they help you in the household. And this is the some kind of, we have this in nearly all folklore stories around the world, and Rowling converted it into the house elves. This typical motif that you have, a species of folklore creatures that's working for you, and in case you're, and most of the time they have really old and destroyed clothes. So in German folk tales, people who see those creatures often think, they are doing so much good work for us. Let's buy them some small clothes and give them to them as a present. And if you do that, they will just say, okay, thank you very much, and go away. Mm-hmm. Because you paid them in some way, and with a payment, they finish their work.
We're running out of time, and I hate it because I really enjoy talking about this stuff. But let's talk a bit more about your art. Can you talk about both the model work that you do and how you do it, which I know you cover in the book, and a little bit about the photography as well?
Yeah, at the beginning, there's always really doing research on the folklore creatures because I want to depict and create my figures really based on the historical descriptions on these creatures, because most modern art depicting folklore is often not really related to the old folk tales. If you really deep dig deep into the old tales. That's why I do really a lot of research before, and I have a colleague, Janine Pisarek. She's a folklorist. She's working with me on that, so we're really going into libraries and searching on the internet really long for this historical evidence. And then I start to use polymer clay or other materials, natural and non-natural materials, to create these creatures. And after this, my photographer, Hannah Gritsch, gets to the point that she can create all these amazing pictures. And therefore, we go to historical sites, into forests, so that we can place these creatures in places where they would have roamed in the folk tales as well. Yeah. So this is some kind of the procedure.
Nice. And thorough.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. Yeah. I just love that using those two different kinds of mediums. It's just beautiful. And I really urge all of our listeners to go out and get a copy of your book, because it's definitely the, in terms of topic and just the artwork, the kind of thing that our listeners just love. So hopefully they'll all grab a copy. But we've got one final question, Florian, and we like to ask all of our guests this. What's your favorite monster?
That's really a tough one. Because there are so many outside. But if I had to decide on one, I would choose the dragon, I guess. Not because it's big or mighty or something like that, but because it's a perfect example to show and demonstrate people how natural science evolved during the centuries, from nature descriptions and mainly copying ancient scriptures to an evidence-based research in the 17th, 18th century. And there are so many different forms of dragons. The typical fantasy depiction of dragons we know is just the tip of the iceberg if you dig into dragon folklore. And they are really interesting creatures. And there are some dragons, especially in the Swiss Alps, for example, in the middle of Europe, who definitely do not look like the normal fantasy dragon. And you really can show amazing stuff on historical point of views with them.
Very neat.
Great answer.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
So is there anything coming up next? What, do you have any more projects, or is just getting this one out the door the big thing right now? Or
my aim is to do books and figures of all folklore creatures of the German-speaking area. So the Hausgeister, the household spirits, were the first one, and they were quite small. That was a good thing to start with. The next one will be the fantastical beasts, so the animal creatures of German folklore. There are some typical creatures like unicorns, cockatrice, basilisk, dragon, who made it in it. Mm-hmm. But there are also some quite unique ones who are just known in really, really small parts of Germany inside as well. This book will come out in November.
Okay.
In German language. And we're also working on some more kind of a fantasy book, some kind of historical fantasy. This will come out in October, and it's not with pictures, but with illustrations. And it tells the story of a young myth zoologist who starts a great expedition in 1862 to preserve folk creatures who are real in this parallel universe from the trains and the whole industrialization come to Europe.
That's,
and he started
fantastic.
This expedition, and I used all the descriptions I did research on for my other more nonfiction books and projects to transfer them into this kind of fantasy novel. But it's not a novel, just a simple novel, but it's some kind of expedition journal. So you get all your information from different journal entries and also newspaper articles who are put inside, historical pictures mixed with illustrations and drawings of these creatures. And I think that's quite an interesting other take on folklore creature. So using these folk tales to do some kind of fantasy setting, but really close to the folk tales. Yeah.
Sorry? We'll have to have you back on the show to talk about these other projects too.
Yeah. Would be nice. Really
good. Yeah. Sounds great. So an epistolary bestiary. That's really neat.
Yeah, it's a little bit like Fantastical Beasts and Where to Find Them, but a bit more major. So there is no small coffin to put them all inside.
Right.
That the person who tries to preserve them is, for example, hunting one of the last unicorns in the Harz Mountains in Germany, and he's constantly asking himself whether it's a good thing to hunt those mythical creatures and to put them, for example, in a zoo or something like that, because they should roam freely, but people are, flooding the world. So in some case, it's more like a book on nature conservation, and I'm a nature conservationist from education, so I put a lot of own ideas into it, but by transferring it to a more fantasy style, it's easier to talk about those topics to a broader audience.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the beauty of fiction.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Florian, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you too for having me.
This was a lot of fun. Great topic. Yeah.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You just heard a discussion with Florian Schaefer about his new book, Hausgeister. A link to that book, which releases at the end of July, but it's available for pre-order now, is in the show notes. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Monster Talk. Each episode, we strive to bring you the very best in monster-related content with a focus on bringing scientific skepticism into the conversation. If you enjoy Monster Talk, we now have a variety of ways to support the show, all with convenient links at monstertalk.org/support. That's monstertalk.org/support. We have links there to our Patreon page as well as a donation button. Another great way to support the show is to buy books from our Amazon Monster Talk wish list, which directly helps us with our research. We love used books very much, so don't feel compelled to buy new ones, and we love Kindle so we can share our digital libraries with each other. And finally, without spending any money at all, you can support us by leaving a positive review at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive reviews help keep us visible in iTunes, which is a great way to help us find new listeners. And please share our show on your favorite social media platforms. Monster Talk's theme music is by Pete Stealing Monkeys. Watch out for Hausgeisters and don't forget to leave them some milk and bread.
Been a Monster House presentation.